Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 2-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you.
How would you react if you had metastatic breast cancer? What if the doctors told you you had to lose your leg in order to save your life if you had bone cancer? Well, that's what my two guests were faced with. Meet Julie Hoker and Glenda Standeven. And throughout their cancer journey, even through all that metastatic cancer and losing a limb, they still are choosing to smile. How are you today, ladies?
Oh, pretty good.
Excellent. Well, let's start with you, Glenda. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I am a mother of two wonderful boys, and I was diagnosed with bone cancer in 1987, and I lost my entire right leg, hip, and pelvis in January 1988, so I'm officially called a hemipelvectomy amputee, which sounds so nice.
That's a long name.
It is. It's the only long one you're getting.
So how did that affect you?
I was married for 5 years to my husband, and we had a 3-year-old son at home, and then you're throwing this loop that, you've got cancer, and you're likely going to have to lose your leg. And you think that you're okay, but you're all the time you're kind of wondering, oh my gosh, this is huge. This is a big chunk of me that's going to be missing, and how's that going to affect us? Well, luckily for me, my husband is absolutely amazing. And to just prove the love, we ended up with another little guy less than 3 years after my surgery. So.
Oh, excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no hip, no pelvis on that side. And it was very few, very, very few amputees that have done that. I think there were, at the time when I had Andrew, there was only 15 documented cases of pregnancies like mine.
Oh.
Yeah,
well,
it was a bit of a exciting time.
I guess. Congratulations. Now, are there advancements in your that you know of in your type of cancer? Were there?
You know, with my type of cancer, I feel quite blessed, actually, as I've met so many people that have had chemo and radiation on top of their surgery. And for me, it was, if the surgery didn't work, well, we're sorry.
Oh.
There's nothing else you can do. It's just that type of cancer that doesn't respond to chemo or radiation, and the surgery was all or nothing. So lucky for me, that was over 22 years ago now, so it worked.
So you just kind of lucked out, huh?
I feel I feel I did. That sounds so funny, but I guess that's part of the choosing to smile attitude, is going, okay, I'm counting my blessings here. I didn't have to have chemo. I didn't have to have radiation. I just had surgery.
Exactly, and a lot of people are, a lot of people don't really like having chemo. Well, I don't know of anyone who does like having chemo.
Yeah. And I've met so many people that have had chemo that feel exactly the same way, Mel, that, it's not the nicest treatment in the world, that's for sure.
That's right. So let's get to Julie. Tell us about yourself.
I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
It was early stage, and all the lymph nodes were negative. So I went ahead and had what was a fairly new procedure that was mastectomy and immediate reconstruction.
Oh.
And did very well. Everything went fine. It affected my attitude to life. I realized that you have to start enjoying every moment of every day and living life on a different level of joy when you've been faced with that. But life was good, and it was about 4.5 years later, I developed a recurrence underneath the reconstructed breast.
Oh.
So the recurrence was right under the breast, and the recommendation was that I have the reconstruction removed. So I'm actually one of the few women in the world that have had a mastectomy on the same side twice. At that time, I was sure I was going to have chemo. Because it was early stage and known negative, I didn't have chemo the first time, but I was sure I was going to be having to have chemo with the recurrence. But the recommendation was that what I needed was the surgery and radiation and 5 years of tamoxifen. So I was relieved. I dodged the chemo bullet again and went on for 6 years after that had great, was great on the tamoxifen, apart from the side effects that caused enlarged uterus and all of that. But then in 2000,
that's one of the side effects.
Well, tamoxifen can cause enlargement, and with me it was causing symptoms, and so eventually I did have a hysterectomy in 2005, which fixed it. But then in 2006, the breast cancer showed up in the pleura of my right lung. So from 2006 until now, I've been on continuous treatments, hormonal treatments to start, and last year's the aggressive chemo. And this year, I have been on a hormonal treatment and another chemo, which we're just now switching to Taxol, which will be starting in the next few weeks.
I don't like Taxol.
No, no, I've heard that, but we're going to do it weekly, which hopefully will be less side effects. So because I have metastatic cancer, I am on going to be on some form of treatment for the rest of my life.
But you're hoping, your goal is to be the longest survivor of metastatic breast cancer, and I think on your research you found someone who's 30 years.
Absolutely, yeah.
Wow.
So that's a nice age.
Yeah. It is a nice age.
So when I was, after my recurrence, I joined a Survivor Dragon Boat team.
And, oh, sweet.
Absolutely loved it and felt that one of my missions in life was to show there's life after breast cancer, and it's good. And then when I was diagnosed with the metastatic disease, I came to the conclusion that now my mission is to show that there's life after metastatic disease and that that can be wonderful, because so many women are given so little hope with that diagnosis. And I'm over 4 years now since that diagnosis, and in that time, I've co-written a book.
Excellent. And we were just mentioning that at the beginning of the show. So tell us about that. It's called Choosing to Smile, which is such a great title.
Our group of friends who went on a girls' weekend in April 2009, just before we went, I had a vision that we should write our stories. Michelle had a short story published in Canadian Living magazine about her experience with Hodgkin's lymphoma.
And before, let me interrupt you, for our listeners, Michelle Rickaby is one of the other survivors, and she couldn't make the interview today. She's on vacation. Lucky duck. Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
So we ended up in a bookstore on this weekend in the inspirational book section, and while we were there, I said to the group, you know what, our stories are just as inspirational as these. We should write our stories and write our book. And that's what we did. 11 months to the day from that day, we had the book in our hands. It's three autobiographies in one, and it's not just a book about cancer. Cancer is part of our lives, but it doesn't define us.
Right,
we started in our childhood and right up to today. So it's who we were before, all the things that we got up to in our teenage years, and the reviews we've had so far have been fabulous. People are saying it's really easy to get into, it's hard to put down, lots of laughter, a few tears, and it seems to be appealing to all ages, and not just to women. We've had reviews from a grandfather and other men who have said they absolutely loved it. And the common theme has been the inspirational part, and that it's not just for people who have had cancer, but people who have faced any kind of adversity in life.
Right, and I think that's one of the things that I try to talk about on this show is, you know, no matter what happens, like, I try to maintain a positive attitude throughout my cancer treatment. And why would you want to be in a bad mood all the time, even if you didn't have cancer or some other, you know, facing adversity?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, we're not saying that we're positive all the time.
Right.
There's days, everybody has those down days. And we're not saying that's what God cured our cancers. But it's certainly, there's a choice at the end of the day. You can choose to either smile or you can choose to be angry and resentful. And for us, choosing to smile was the only way to go. And that's, once we'd written our story, that title became the perfect title, because that really describes the three of us, how we've dealt with what life has given us.
Absolutely. I know when I wake up in the morning, I actually make that conscious effort, look down, see my five toes and go, hey, good morning, five toes. I'm really glad to see you. I've met people with no toes. So for me, you know what? Count my blessings. And there's five of them down there. That's a good thing.
Exactly. And you're still alive here to tell us your story. Now, you wrote the book in 11 months.
Yes.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah, people say that, but it actually, we're all in our 50s now, and we say that it's taken us that long to write the book because
That's
we
true.
Had to live that long to get enough experiences to share and life experiences that we have something important to say. You know, it's something that we've all lived through, and like Julie said, it's not just about the cancer. We have lives before the cancer. We had
right.
that little bit of time during, and a whole lot, hopefully, touch wood, for after.
And I think a lot of people think that when they're in, especially when they're in the treatment bubble, that, oh my God, everything is about cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's and it's hard for people to see, and I see people on Facebook, like I'm sure that you do, that feel like the light at the end of the tunnel is so far away.
Mm-hmm.
That they're just, you know, oh my God, it's just cancer, cancer, cancer. And I remember when I was going through treatment, I just thought when I went into work, and if I was upset that day, people would just think, oh God, there's cancer girl and she's upset at whatever, you know. But
yeah.
like you're saying, you can't, there is the light at the end of the tunnel. It doesn't matter if you started, you know, 2 years ago or today, or like Julie is still going through treatment. I mean, you can still see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, and I think it's important to see the light along the way,
mm-hmm.
not just at the end. That
right.
there's going to be times when there's not a lot of light, but you can usually find something to lift your spirits,
exactly.
something that you can enjoy that day. And I think that's the important thing, is finding those moments and finding joy in every day.
I think you've been listening to my show a little bit, too.
Maybe just a little bit.
Because that's something.
But that's so true, Mel. You do. You have to find those mm-hmm. moments of light along the way, and make those moments of light. If they're not coming to you, go to them.
Absolutely.
Well, like you, Glenda, you probably, ironically, your name is Stand Even, like we were talking about before, and you have one leg. It must have been, you know, difficult at first to realize, oh, I'm going to lose my leg. But in the end result, you still have your life.
Exactly. Mel, I feel kind of like I cheated a little bit because I had this amazing prophetic dream before I was told that I was going to lose my leg, and I actually sort of had this dream vision of what it would be like, my life on two legs, and
mm-hmm.
snap over to a vision of what my life would be like on one leg. And at the end of the day, I lived the same amount of time, but totally different lives. Well, the two-legged
right.
life was nice. I called it fluffy, and it was just a nice, fluffy life. But that one-legged one was so much harder,
mm-hmm.
but it was filled with so many more important, meaningful moments, living a life that mattered. That's how it felt at the end. I went, ah, wow, now that was a life that mattered. And I wrote in my journal, I says, you know, after the dream I had last night, I know I'm going to lose my leg and it's going to be okay.
Wow.
So it was sort of an amazing prophetic moment when I realized that sometimes the life without pain isn't so much of a life. It's the ones
That's
that
true.
When you have that pain and you can rise through it and you just go, woohoo, and make a difference.
Well, that's true. I mean, would you rather, if you're at a theme park, go on the safe ride or the roller coaster?
See, I'm a roller coaster lady.
See, there you go. Exactly. Exactly. So, Julie, I was just thinking, so you had the mastectomy, and then you had your breast reconstruction, so you're probably one of the only people that I know who actually got to choose their breasts and then had to have it removed.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's very unusual. What was that like?
It was. And, you know, I just got to actually, I really liked my new breast and I was very happy with it. And it was, you know, when you know that you're going to lose your own breast, you say goodbye to it. And it's that mm-hmm. feeling of tomorrow it's going to be in a specimen jar, a part of my body. And then a second time, 4.5 years later, I'm losing the reconstructed breast. And I had the transplant, so it was abdominal muscle that they had used to recreate a breast. So it was all my flesh that they were taking away again. But, you know, I needed to save my life. And I was diagnosed with a recurrence a month before the birth of our first grandchild.
Oh, wow.
And I held her in my arms the first time, and I made a vow to her that I would do everything in my power to be at her graduation and at her wedding. And losing a breast was, you know, that's what I had to do. Even though it was a second breast, that's what I had to do.
Now, are you going to get another reconstruction on that spot? Or
I can't, because there is so much scarring from the radiation and the reconstruction and the removal that it would be just about impossible. And, you know, I'm quite happy with the prosthesis now.
Oh, excellent.
It does look good.
Yes. And I have an amazing husband who, no matter how many body parts I lose, he loves me even more.
Well, that's true. And I think one of the most important things is to have a good support system.
Absolutely.
You know, like my fiance, like as soon as I told him that I had breast cancer, we went and saw, see the doctor, and it was like, okay, what do we have to do? And, you know, he cleaned like the entire apartment, and he didn't let me, I basically didn't lift a finger for like about a year, which, you know, looking back, that was kind of cool.
That's
not what I would recommend. You know, don't pretend you have cancer so your man will clean the house or anything, but.
But to have that kind of support when you need it the most, that's when you really know that you're loved.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Michelle had the same type of support system, I believe, yes?
No, not so much. See, that's another part of the story, too, is Julie and I both had very supportive husbands, but Michelle wasn't quite so lucky, and her relationship actually ended in divorce.
Oh.
So she's very lucky now. She's got a new man that they've been married for how many years? 5 years, I think?
5 years now, yeah.
And he's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's
so the stories, you know, their life stories, there's love stories, there's, you know, one of the reviews that we got, the person commented that this was not just about cancer, it was about the wholeness of life.
Right.
Oh, I love that, the wholeness of life.
Yeah, the wholeness of life, that's excellent. So how many books have you sold so far, now that it's just been a few months? Do you know?
I think we're getting up into the 1,000 mark here. We're thinking about putting another order in, actually.
And excellent. And
somebody told me that if we sell 5,000 copies, it's classed as a Canadian bestseller. So I think we're heading that way pretty darn fast.
Now, did you self-publish this book? Or
we did.
Chop it out?
We started our own publishing company. We were that optimistic.
Oh, excellent.
I know. Isn't that great? I just went, sure, why not? Because Choosing to Smile, we could do books on that, collecting stories on people who are choosing to smile after divorce, choosing to smile after beating an addiction, or choosing to smile after losing a child or a spouse.
So basically, we see this as the first book in a series of Choosing to Smile books.
Oh, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you started the publishing company. How difficult was that?
I'm not going to say it was easy, but when you have three brains working on it, it seemed to everything fall into place really quickly for us, which the whole project, Mel, from start to finish, has been miraculously blessed.
Amazing, amazing. We wrote the book. We registered a legal partnership between the three of us. We developed Choosing to Smile Publications. We self-published. We hired our own editors, hired our own book designers, a photographer that was a friend did the front cover. And at the same time, I started chemotherapy. And still, within 11 months, we had the book done and Choosing to Smile Publications. And
It's just one of those adventures that have been guided the whole way. And you
just
know
amazing.
That it's something special.
It's amazing. Now, I found you on Facebook because, as everyone knows, I'm a Facebook junkie. And I'm just amazed that I am. I'll be honest. You'll see me on there. That you have you have almost 4,000 members. And when did you start your group, approximately? Not that long ago.
No, it wasn't.
It was in the late fall of 2009. And I know that in December, I think it was December 12th, we put out, wouldn't it be wonderful to have 1,000 members by December 31st, or by Christmas? And we did. And then we put out, let's get 2010 by 2010.
And we did.
And we did. And it just went from there, and we have members all over the world.
Awesome. And they leave their stories on your site as well?
Yeah, there's lots of links on there. And they're not, this is not all cancer survivors. This
right.
is people who just want to adopt that philosophy of choosing to smile.
The people who have faced any kind of adversity on there. We have people who have recovered alcoholics, and we have people who have survived the loss of a child and are going through the sickness of a child and all sorts of adversities, and they're going, you know what, I'm still choosing to smile.
Exactly.
And people who have not faced anything but are understanding the value of choosing to smile and seeing the importance of not worrying about the small stuff and enjoying every moment of every day.
Absolutely. People who just have adopted it as a philosophy of life.
Yeah.
Well, of course, it takes more muscles to frown than it does to smile. So.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, why waste the energy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm basically really lazy. I smile a lot.
There you go. I like that philosophy. I'm lazy. What are you doing? I'm smiling. It's all good. Yeah, I got that a lot. Like, when I was going through treatment, I would come into work with a smile on my face. And like you said, every day wasn't, you know, sunshine and puppies, although that would be sweet if it was. But, you know, a lot of people are like, wow, you know, if I was going through this, I don't think I would be as happy as you are all the time. And I'm like, well, why wouldn't you be? I mean, you're alive. Even, you know, I don't understand the poor me philosophy.
No.
At all. I think it's kind of foreign. I mean, yes, I'll admit as cancer survivors, we do have those moments. But I think for the three of us, and maybe even for the four of us, including Michelle, they're fleeting. It's just like, I think I had a couple woe is me moments, and I'm thinking, what? You know, I'm here. I got diagnosed early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm pretty lucky in that respect. I mean, Glenda, you lost your leg, but you're still here. You didn't have to go through chemo and radiation,
exactly.
Which is awesome. And you wrote this book in 11 months, which is, that's crazy.
It is.
It was so much fun. We were so focused, and we met regularly, and we encouraged each other, and it was very intense time, but it was an amazing, wonderful time.
Yeah, we gave ourselves weekly deadlines, and I have never been a deadline person, but with two taskmasters like Julie and Michelle, I'm going, okay, I will do it. 4 o'clock in the morning, I'd be up writing.
We decided from the start, if we're going to do this, it's not going to take years to write. We're going to do it, and we're going to have a deadline, and we're going to get it done, and we did.
Excellent. Now, I'm not sure, because I was looking through the bios and everything that you sent. Are you ladies working, or the book is everything that you're focusing on and your family right now?
When I was diagnosed with metastatic disease, I stopped working.
Okay.
So I'm not working, but Glenda is.
So you're lazy, like Glenda says, with the smiling and everything?
Hey, what makes you think I'm not working?
No, she said, I'm glad. No, you're just smiling too much. And smiling is not the same as going to the gym.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, that's true. Michelle works full-time at the university. And
which university is that?
University of the Fraser Valley,
okay.
USC.
Okay.
And she has a full-time job. I don't know how she does it. Mm-hmm. I don't think that girl ever sleeps. So she is on a very well-deserved vacation.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah, she puts in a lot of time.
Yeah.
And Glenda, since we were laughing, I couldn't tell. You said you were mostly focusing on the book, or?
I am.
Okay.
I'm
jealous.
Let's see. I'm a semi-retired reflexologist.
Oh, excellent.
I still have a couple of my favorites that I like to see. Julie's one of them. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's the book. I really want to. My husband says, honey, this is our retirement you're working on. So he works full-time and makes me.
But Glenda also works as many hours, put in volunteer time,
right,
as a full-time job many weeks. She volunteers for the Optimist Club. She volunteers in the school district doing Just Say No speeches and lots of other volunteer time.
And I do. I am a paid speaker as well. I do have a smoking awareness program for teens that I go into schools and present. But with budget cuts, it's been a little slow this year.
But you give inspirational speeches, though, about your own story.
I do.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So your website is called choosingtosmile.com.
That's right.
And
same with our Facebook group, which you know, Mel.
Yes. I don't know anything about Facebook. is that the best place for people to get hold of you, say they don't have Facebook?
Yeah, the www.choosingtosmile. They can email us through that. and there's information about how to get the book on that site, too.
And actually, Mel, we
yes.
have a super deal for our American viewers. We've really got a great shipping price
awesome.
For American orders online on our Facebook or on our website. So
if you're listening, well, I shouldn't say if you're listening, but since you're listening, choosingtosmile.com and just click on, buy the book right there.
Exactly.
Click on that, and they have great deals for those of us below the border there, I guess.
Mm-hmm. and it isn't written in a foreign language. It's Canadian.
Is it A? I know, I was going to say, is that in most of the book there, A?
You know, I had chemo today. Canadians who do that. sort of one of those funny things that, Julie, do I say A?
No. But you'll probably hear a little bit of my English accent in the book. If that comes through.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
That's awesome.
But it makes it interesting because all three stories are written by three very unique and different personalities.
Right.
So that definitely comes through in the book.
And some of our reviewers have said, I feel like I've been sitting on the couch chatting with you. That's the kind of book that it is. And one reviewer said it's like an afternoon sitting chatting with girlfriends.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, because I like books like that are more like, you know, less technical, medical kind of books, but more like, this could be about me.
Absolutely. It's about us. There's love stories in it. There's, you know, the things that we got up to when we were teenagers and really about life as baby boomers growing up in the 50s and 60s and leading up to who we are now.
I know my oldest boy read it. I won't let my youngest one read it yet. But my 26-year-old read it, and he went, Mom, he says, I think you're going to be the reason I need therapy.
You're like, thanks, son.
I said, honey, what can I say? I grew up in the 70s.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Well, ladies, I want to thank you for joining us today. Once again, if they want to get a hold of you, it's choosingtosmile.com. And Glenda, you have your own website, glendastandeven.com. And we can find that information on your website.
Absolutely.
As well as on Facebook. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mel Majoros. I am the cancer warrior. Like I always say, I'm a Facebook junkie. You can find me on there, Mel Majoros or the cancer warrior on empowerradio.com. Check out my blogspot, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting, sending you good vibes. It's the cancer warrior on empowerradio.com.